Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are still diving into the 14th Amendment. This is really critical. As a matter of fact, this is paramount as far as covering this topic, because this is where the states are held to the Bill of Rights. This is where the hard definition of citizenship and apportionment for citizenship as well. Now, one of the things we've kind of already covered has been the fact that states at this point in time could, there is nowhere in this part of the Constitution that says states can't have a poll tax. In other words, creating barriers for people to be able to vote. Now, they basically identify that any person that is ineligible to vote does not count towards apportionment. Apportionment is done every 10 years, and it is defined by how many people are considered eligible voters. Then for the next 10 years, based on what the state has been able to account for, that is how many representatives they will be apportioned. That's what the whole apportionment literally reflects, the amount of representatives that will be available to represent the people within the given state, and how the state divides up those congressional districts is really, it's up to the state themselves. So with that, we're going to get into Section 3. I told you we're going to actually read parts of the congressional debate, or more specifically, how the Senate debated this concept of Section 3, where a lot of people, when they read this, they think, oh, well, this is all about treason. It is not. And as a matter of fact, the words moral perjury are being used. And we're going to read up to that point where they get to that. There's like, I want to say about 6-7 pages where they go through and discuss this whole issue of being able to remove somebody from office because they have failed to support the Constitution. In other words, you don't have to prove somebody be treasonous, that they have, that they're leading some huge resistance against the United States. It is literally a matter of moral perjury. And at least at this point in time, the oath still meant something, to where today, it doesn't matter. If you've elected somebody and they're out there saying, I'm able to do whatever, I've been a duly elected person. No, your job and your function is dictated upon your oath of office, which means your first job is to support the Constitution. There is nothing that you can do in your position, if you fail to support the Constitution, there's nothing you can do to save your job. The only reason we still have an abundance of collusion, abundance of corruption, and all of these problems is all because we are not enforcing Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. So as you listen to all the conservative entertainers out there, and how some of them will even bring up the Constitution. And as a matter of fact, I got a good kick out of Sean Hannity on TV yesterday, and I just happened to catch it, you know, because I don't spend a lot of time listening to conservative entertainers. I was literally just walking by. So call this the divine hand of providence, where Sean Hannity was actually reading and quoting the Constitution regarding the ability to face your accuser. I believe it is in the Bill of Rights. I think it's, I'm pretty sure it is Amendment 6. Anyway, as far as, you know, all the conservative entertainers that are at least, you know, pulling this up, and maybe just the fact of my presence in the airwaves, my presence in the milieu, in the environment of getting a message out, where people are, you know, conservative talk show hosts, whatever you want to call them, I call them conservative entertainers. But bottom line is, maybe my presence is finally forcing the paradigm to start shifting towards the Constitution. And that's a good thing. That's a great thing. And my hat's off to Sean Hannity for at least going in that direction, but he has not gone far enough. And as a matter of fact, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is what we have to start enforcing. But in the process of enforcing Section 3, it also comes down to enforcing the Constitution, you know, to the letter. In other words, making sure that the federal government is only doing those things that has been delegated to them. And we're going to get more into that after we dive into those things. But I still am obligated to kind of tell you where we're at and what we're going to do. We won't probably have time to get into the oath of citizenship, but we're ready to go if we get to that point. I will tell you that once we're all done with the 14th Amendment and the oath of citizenship, then we're going to cover the ex post facto and the bills of attainder laws. Then we should have time, which is, I'm hoping, by next week, by next Thursday, that we can read the Thanksgiving Proclamation by George Washington. And we're going to get into why this is so important. That whole show is going to be dedicated to that. That way, you will understand the importance of Thanksgiving. So, with that, I also want to let you know that we're trying to challenge you, the listeners, to expand the listening and the reach of this show. There is a dial-in number, 605-562-4209, and by all means, you can always text somebody to just dial that number and listen in and say, this is what you've been missing. If you listen to what this gentleman is speaking about, or heathen, I don't care what you refer to me as, but if you listen to what the message that I'm conveying, this is all about fixing the problems. This is all about getting into alliance and compliance to the Constitution. Our biggest problem is due to the fact that we are not in compliance to the Constitution. So with that, let me also tell you that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And those of you that have been constantly tuning into this show, you know you are listening to the only show that provides academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions to the problem. Now, one of the things I think is interesting, if you haven't heard in the news, Chile is about ready to try to confirm a new constitution. You've heard me state, why is it that Trump is not out leading in the nation to get rid of the UN and actually start telling states, hey, Chile, if you want to petition and apply to become a state of these United States, by all means, let us know. We will get the ball rolling, and who knows, in 10, 20, 30, 40 years, you can be a full-fledged state and partaker in the Constitutional Republic. That's where we need to be leading. And by doing so, then we don't have to worry about trying to do nation building at all, because it's not, if you understand, each state is an independent and sovereign state. We're not a national government. The national government only has very few and defined roles, responsibilities, and powers. So with that, I would love to see Trump start leading in that message of saying, you know what, if you are ready to abandon your, you know, your revolving door of tyrants, if you're ready to abandon your failed system of socialism and democracy, you are more than welcome, people. If you want to embrace individual liberty and individual sovereignty, you are more than willing to, you know, take it to the vote of the people and become a state of the United States, we will be here to help you. And that message needs to go to Taiwan, Hong Kong, and all over the place. As a matter of fact, I even mentioned this a long, long time ago, that Iraq should have been considered a, you know, a territory, or we should have at least, you know, given those people an opportunity to become a state. You know, it would have been a long way to go for them because, for the most part, they flip-flopped back and forth into theologies, and theocratic government does not mold into our constitutional republic. That's one of the reasons why most people recognize how Sharia law and what the Mohammedans, Islamists, or whatever you want to call them here in America, have become problematic. With that, we have Red State Coffee. I want to plug Red State Coffee. Please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org, click on the link to take you to Red State Coffee. Give this a try. In doing so, you'll be supporting us, and you'll be supporting an awesome sponsor who is patriotic in almost everything that they do. They fight for Second Amendment rights. It's Patriot Coffee, I believe, is what the parent company is. But Red State Coffee is out there. And it's one of those products that you can enjoy while you're listening to me just go on and on about being a red state and being a constitutional state within our constitutional republic. So with that, we're going into a hard break. And so when we come back, we're going to be diving into some other comments. I'm going to bypass all the groveling today, and we will get towards the 14th Amendment so that I can actually start reading the debates within the Senate. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so, one of the interesting things that kind of came out of yesterday's show is, because it kind of slapped me in the face, because sometimes when you're reading these things, you skim over something and you never necessarily make the connection. And I've been really attuned this past 5-6 months regarding the upcoming census. And as I stated earlier, the census is huge because that is how the apportionment is supposed to go. And so if you understand that we're dealing with a bunch of progressive organizations. If you don't know, I'll tell you. Planned Parenthood is getting very involved in getting out regarding the apportionment and getting people identified. Now, I want you to understand this. Currently, the people who are being counted in apportionment is everybody. And as I read to you yesterday, the 14th Amendment actually limits the amount of amount and who can be apportioned. And so the the only other time apportionment is mentioned in the rest of the amendments, because I scoured them yesterday, and the only other time the apportionment is mentioned is in the 16th Amendment, and it's regarding the apportionment of direct taxes or income tax. There is no other comment, no other mention regarding apportionment. So in other words, in constitutional perspective, the how they've laid out apportionment in the Constitution and now in the 14th Amendment, they have made it clear that people who are not U.S. citizens cannot vote. Anybody who is allowing non-citizens to vote is absolutely involved in insurrection and rebellion against the Constitution. What does this mean? What this means is that the Democratic Party is in whole lock, stock, and in step with the communists in trying to overthrow our republic. So if you look back at the types of topics and the things that I have been talking about, like the Tory Acts, I am trying to set the paradigm for you, the framers' paradigm, in acknowledging and understanding those who are absolutely hardwired and full intent into overthrowing our constitutional republic. And in doing so, what they're doing is they are allowing those who are those individuals and organizations, entities like Mohammedans and Islamists, they are allowing them to actually violate the laws of the land by instituting their own laws, such as Sharia law. That in itself is a direct insurrection against the Constitution. Why? We're going to get into that. As you will read in the Senate debates, and as I'm going to read to you in the Senate debates, that every person who is a lawmaker, regardless of their stature, regardless of their position, from a city, township, to a county commissioner, to a state legislator, these are our sovereigns throughout our distributive political system. And even in Congress, they are all duty-bound by their oath of office that they cannot commit moral perjury, that they cannot violate. And if they violate their oath of office, they can be removed and banned for life from ever serving as a public servant in any capacity ever again. Now, I also believe that they should be stripped, and I think it goes into that if you read through these things throughout the 7 pages. I believe it's about 7 pages. And as a matter of fact, instead of me saying I believe it's about, I'll just tell you the one that I am looking at, it was 6 pages. So technically it was 5 pages plus a little corner. Because if you go through these, you know, the first page is just a small little paragraph out of a huge page, because apparently the books that they got, or the ledger that they used for recording the business of the Senate and the business of the House, I mean, it's like 3 columns and they're pages in themselves. So it's like 3 pages wide and a much longer page than your regular page. So anyway, if you've never seen the records of Congress or the The Congressional Globe is what we're reading out of. This is the Congressional Globe. There are three different documents, or I should say records. There were the Annals of Congress, then there is the Congressional Globe, I'm sorry, and then the third is the Records of Congress, our congressional record. And so that's what we're currently adding to today, and that's got, you know, well over 100 years of history in the congressional record. So with that, let me just kind of dive forward. But before I dive forward, what I want to do, and I think it's imperative, is to reread the message once again of Section 3. No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president or vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state. That means that covers everybody. If you have to take an oath of office, you are now covered. Who, having previously taken an oath, and then comma, as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state's legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same. Now, when they say the same, against the Constitution of the United States. They're not talking about the government. They're talking about the Constitution. Or given aid or comfort to enemies thereof, but Congress may by vote. So in other words, these people shall, no person shall be. So it starts off with no person shall be a senator and or any type of legislator at any level if they have given aid or if they have violated their oath of office in not supporting the Constitution. And or, and then they go, but Congress may by a vote of 2/3 of each house remove such disability. So in other words, anybody that violates the Constitution can be removed from office. Do you get this? Do you how can we get rid of everybody? Says let's impeach Schiff. No, Schiff has been, there is plenty of evidence of Schiff violating the Constitution. Almost every single person in, even Republicans in Congress, have violated the Constitution. Do you get it? We can clear out the entire thing. The problem is that we don't have the enforcements. Nobody is enforcing the law of the land. Nobody is enforcing the Constitution. Well, shoot, who does that fall upon? It falls upon the states. And as a matter of fact, if you read my article, I will actually point out that it is the state's responsibility. They are duty-bound, according to Madison, to interpose and arrest any evil that is trying to subvert our Constitution. Okay, so now that we've reread Section 3, what is important is that we dive into now sections... let me see here. Yeah. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read Section 3 out of the Senate's journal from the Congressional Globe. Now this is on page 2897. Okay. So they have all these big, huge pages and there's a lot of documents and records, but they wrote down every word and, or, filled in with some, commentary. So anyway, Mr. Hendricks starts off, and what ends up happening is whoever is the secretary for the Senate reads Section 3, what I just read to you. Then Mr. Hendricks stands up and says, I move to amend the amendment by inserting after the word shall in the 37th line the words during the term of office. He's trying to inject during the term of office. And he goes on and says, I understand the idea upon, because I had to go to another page. It literally just ended that page of 2897. Now we're on page 2898 and the very top left-hand corner. And what I'm going to do is I'm thinking I'm going to post all of these on important information on the website because these are images. These are high resolution images that you can read. And anyway, so Mr. Hendricks keeps going and saying, the idea which this section rests, it is, I suppose, that men who held office and upon assuming the office took the oath prescribed by the Constitution, became obliged by that oath to stand by the Constitution and the oath, and that going into the rebellion was not only a breach of their allegiance, but a breach of their oath. I presume that is the theory of it, and the persons who have violated the oath to support the Constitution of the United States ought to not be allowed to hold any states. I'm going to have to repeat this when I come back. This is a lot of good information, because he's actually going to get into how they are defining this. And by the way, this amendment actually falls out because they do not add during the term of office. So we'll be right back after these two promos. So stay tuned. This is good stuff. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so let me kind of start over from where, because I didn't finish that sentence. So let me start at the beginning of the sentence again. And again, this is Mr. Hendricks, and this is an amendment or a change he is trying to make to Section 3. And so it is, I suppose, that men who held office and upon assuming the office took the oath prescribed by the Constitution, became obligated by the oath to stand by the Constitution and the oath, and that going into rebellion, they're talking about the Civil War, was not only a breach of their allegiance, but a breach of their oath. I presume, now you got to remember, when they actually went into rebellion, their rebellion was that they seceded. They weren't trying to take up arms. They weren't trying to kill anybody. They seceded from the Union. So in other words, this was a context that they placed upon this, that they were literally considering these folks as treasonous, or at least rebelling against the Constitution. Now, what the South had done by seceding was far more constitutional than what our Democrats are doing today, to be very clear. because we are under attack by the Democrats by allowing people to have unabashed access and just be able to walk right into America and actually start handing them privileges. And it's not just the Democrats, it is the judiciary that is supporting these concepts. And oh, by the way, the federal judiciary no longer takes an oath that they will support the Constitution. They take an oath in trying to support their agendas. Now, I'm you know, elaborating a little bit, but anyway, let me keep going. I presume that it is the theory of it that all persons who have violated the oath to support the Constitution of the United States ought not to be allowed to hold any office. If it does not rest upon the proposition, then I am not able to see why these men should be excluded more than others who have violated their allegiance. Now, sir, what is the obligation prescribed in the sixth article of the Constitution? And now he reads that sixth article. The senators and representatives before mentioned and the members of the several states, legislatures, and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. Now, I'm telling you, anybody who is a legislator, such as a city, anybody who makes law is held to that because they are considered sovereigns. And that's why they take an oath and they need to be held to that oath. I presume that that oath means that in the discharge of the duties of the office, the party will support the Constitution of the United States. I have not examined any authorities upon this subject, and I have seen no opinion expressed upon it, but I presume that is the meaning and force of the oath. When a senator of the United States takes the oath to support the Constitution of the United States, it means that as a senator in the discharge of his official duty, he will obey the Constitution and in no respect violate its provisions. How many legislators and how many sovereigns at the federal level and the state level are absolutely violating their oath of office because they are not supporting it, which means that they're violating the Constitution? How many, folks? Just think about this as I read this. If a member of a state legislator takes that oath, I presume it means that as a legislator for the state, he will respect and obey the Constitution, and when his term of office has expired, I suppose the oath ceases to be obligatory upon him, or rather that the oath has done its work. If he has obeyed the oath while he held the office, I presume his obedience to it is no longer required by virtue of the oath itself. Everybody, by virtue of his allegiance, is bound to obey the Constitution of the United States, to stand by the Union. But this oath of itself, and so he's saying stand by the Union. No, it's actually, he's to correct him, it's to stand by the Constitution, not the Union. But this oath of itself is an oath of office binding upon him as an officer. Else why is it that if a senator taking his oath serves 6 years and is reelected, he is sworn again? For the simple reason that he is entering upon another term of service, and for that term of service, he must take this official oath to obey the Constitution of the United States. I presume this oath means, if it is read, senators and representatives and all other officers in the United States and the states shall be bound by an oath or affirmation to support the Constitution of the United States in their offices. I know of no other purpose that there can be to require a special oath from an officer. If this is to be the proper construction of the oath, and I do not express an opinion upon the subject with a great deal of confidence, then the amendment which I propose to this section ought to be adopted, because after the term of service has expired in any particular office, the official oath is satisfied, and the party becomes one of the mass in the community, and if he went into the rebellion, he went into it violating his allegiance like any and other citizens who with him went into rebellion, for it is for that reason that I had proposed the amendment. Now, Mr. Howard steps up and says, I hope this amendment will not be adopted. I do not regard the constitutional oath referred to by the senator from Indiana precisely in the same light in which he presents it. If I understand him rightly, he holds that although a person may have taken that constitutional oath, if he has not committed insurrection during the continuance of his term of service, but commits that act after the expiration of that term, and I want to add, or even before that term, if somebody has done a violation of the Constitution before they even become elected, they should not be allowed to be an elected servant. Anyway, that's GR's addition or editorializing of that term. The previous taking of the oath by him adds to the act no additional moral guilt. I do not concur with him in that view. It seems to me that where a person has taken a solemn oath to support the Constitution of the United States, there is a fair moral implication that he cannot afterward commit an act which in its effect would destroy the, going all the way back up to the top into the second column, the Constitution of the United States without incurring the guilt of at least moral perjury. Do you hear it? Did you hear what I just said? Moral perjury, not treason, moral perjury, because I'm taking an oath of office and or I'm taking an oath and as so I have to support the Constitution. And if I do so, I am committing moral perjury. I desire to see such a comment made upon this violation of the oath of office by insurgents as will stigmatize that act for all time to come. And I think the loyal people of the United States are of the same opinion. Now, they go on and debate this, but what I wanted to just show you, because this is just the beginning setup of how they were trying to attach a firm paradigm to what this section was all about. Now, Hendricks was asking to amend the amendment, amend that part in adding to during the term of office. That never made it. As a matter of fact, if I read through this, they actually voted on it and it failed. But the understanding was clear that the whole concept of this section is right there, guilt of at least moral perjury. And therefore, they can no longer be eligible to hold or sit in office and or hold office ever again until 2/3 of both houses of Congress remove such disability. So in other words, they're basically making the law that anybody that supports insurrection or supports the violation of the Constitution is committing moral perjury. Therefore, how many are supporting this idea of Dreamers' pathway to citizenship? I'm sorry, folks. You know, regardless of what parents do, and kids will always be victims of their parents' behavior. But it doesn't mean that they should get a gold path to citizenship. It's just the same thing as, well, you know, here's a corporate CEO that did some bad. You know, it doesn't mean that we should take the money away from them and doing all of that stuff because it's going to hurt the kids. I'm sorry. The consequences of the crime affect the entire family, regardless. And, oh, by the way, the president has never been given the power to legislate and or to create such type of law. And anybody, and this is the thing that bothers me about what Trump is doing, because he's actually pointing to presidential legislation to say the Dreamers Act. Are you kidding me? I'm here to tell you that we have to stop supporting these concepts that may be noble intent. The only way we can actually start doing things differently, regardless of its nobility and its intent, regardless, we have to hold the line that it has to be amended to the Constitution before you can exercise it, period. And with that, we're going into another break. We will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so what I had just read was literally only 1/15 of the conversation that was held by the Senate regarding Section 3. They actually have a couple of rounds of injecting different changes to Section 3, and all of them fail. It is very clear that the intent was to ensure that anybody who takes an oath of office, regardless of the level, must be held to their oath of office. And if they violate it, they lose their privilege of serving, they lose their privilege of being able to ever run and be a public servant again. Now, here's the thing. There are so many people that do not understand the Constitution. And because they do not understand the Constitution, they are violating it with ignorance. Now, have you ever been pulled over by an officer of the law? A police officer, patrolman, sheriff, whatever. And they happen to tell you that driving along with your parking lights at dusk is illegal. And then you say, well, I didn't know that, officer. Then what you'll probably find out is that, oh, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Which means that when somebody chooses to step into the fray of political service, that they have to take an oath of office, they have to be fully aware of what the Constitution is and what it is not. Now, so in this conversation I had with Keith Broders last night, I know he's off doing due diligence and looking up and going with a fine-tooth comb in going through the Constitution and all the amendments regarding apportionment. You will find that what I have disclosed to you in the 14th Amendment is the only such change to apportionment. And as he has reported, and as we have identified, the federal government is counting illegal aliens. They're counting felons who have violated their, you know, their oath of citizenship and have committed felonies and so forth. Apportionment based on the 14th Amendment is based upon legal voters, people who are eligible to vote in the state, not people who are not. If you understand this, California is overrepresented because of all of its illegal aliens are being counted for representation. In other words, they're violating, those who are doing apportionment at the federal level are violating the Constitution because they're not adhering to this apportionment definition in the 14th Amendment, Section 2. And so this needs to start being raised, because if you want to see the playing field just a little bit fairer, shaken out just a little bit better so that everybody can go, okay, that's a little bit better, then we need to make sure that California is not overrepresented. They have way too many representatives, and New York is the same. New York has illegal aliens in it as well. Every state that has a high population of illegal aliens and people who are not eligible to vote, i.e. felons, because they even identify felons, they should not be able to vote. And because it's actually in there, as a matter of fact, let's go back to that, because I think that's really important. Section 2, representatives shall be apportioned among the several states according to their respective numbers, continuing the whole person in each state, excluding Indians not taxed. But when the right to vote at any election for the choice of electors for president, vice president of the United States, representatives in Congress, the executive and the judicial officers of a state, excuse me, I don't know if you just noticed this, but the executive and judicial officers of the state or the members of the legislature thereof is denied to any male inhabitant, or let's just replace those words with legal voter, right? Because of such state being 21 years of age, because at this point in time, you had to be 21 years of age to vote. Now we have it down to 18. They did not change the apportionment. So all the language in this section still is applicable. And citizens of the United States in any way abridged except for participation in rebellion or other crime. So in other words, if you're not allowing these people to vote for any reason, whether it be rebellion or committing any other crime, then they cannot be counted. The basis of representation therein shall be reduced into the proportion which this number of such male citizens shall bear the whole number of male citizens, 21 of age, of the age in such state. In other words, anybody who's not eligible to vote should be reduced from the allocation or apportionment so that representation is only being represented to those who are legal voters, male and female. That's simple, folks. And the census is coming up. For the past 4 censuses, if not more, they have been counting illegals and people who should not be eligible for counting and representation. The 14th Amendment is very clear. And the reason they did this is they wanted to stick it to states that were trying to give themselves an advantage of apportionment, but not allowing or trying to count people who are not eligible to vote. And so I'm here to tell you that if we're going to fix this, then we have to start abiding by the Constitution. So what's it going to take? I'll poke you in right now. What is it going to take to get you to start supporting this concept of enforcing the Constitution? The one word, compliance. Say it with me, compliance. We have to demand compliance to our Constitution. Now, as I was speaking with a listener yesterday regarding, you know, how few kids even understand the Constitution, they do not understand. As a matter of fact, it came in context because a friend of mine was discussing having a home sitter to take care of their dogs and so forth. And so they were looking at, having kids come, and he was pretty biased on his concept because he felt that only a girl should be, because girls are maturer, is his assertion, than men at the ages of 18 or 19. He was looking for somebody who just graduated and just either going to school or still at home with their folks to actually come and, sit his house. And there was a reason why he wanted girls, because he said girls understand limits. Girls have a maturity to understanding, what they can do and what they can't do without having to spell things out. And my comment to my listeners, I told him this story, was I said, bottom line is if people understood enumerations, then they would understand what they can do and what they can't do. And the enumerations in our Constitution identify the things that the federal government can do. So if you did it this way, if you said, this is what you can do, this, you can do this, you can do this, you can do this. If there's anything else that you think of that might be either associated to those or might not be associated to those, it doesn't matter. If it's not explicitly this, 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 and this, then you can't do it. Because I've enumerated what you can do. Everything else, you can't. So in the rules of the home, if I didn't say you can go into every room of the house, the spaces that are open to you are open to you. Doors that are shut are shut. In other words, if I didn't say you could go in a shut door, that doesn't mean you can go in that shut door. But see, that's why we have a Bill of Rights, because the Bill of Rights actually starts listing the nugatory or the things that you can't do as well. I believe that the Bill of Rights was necessary by the time we hit the 14th Amendment. And that was necessary because, and if you understand the whole context of the Constitution, they didn't settle the slavery issue until less than a month left in the debates. It was August 22nd, and the Constitution was signed. Actually, it was done the week before. It just went into a style committee to be finalized because, for the most part, 3 weeks after that, or probably 2 weeks after August 22nd, they were done. They were about to inject, they were about to ensure that slavery ended, and that's when Georgia and the two Carolinas stepped forward and said, if you make this about slavery, we will leave the Union. We will not ratify this Constitution. And that saddened me. But as you understand here, Section 3 is about moral perjury. What we don't have time to do today, and in our next episode, we will get into it. We're going to cover Section 4, and we're going to cover Section 5. Now, I want you to understand, if you know what a sovereign citizen is, nowhere in these debates of the 14th Amendment do they identify that they are constitutionally creating corporations. That some of the things that they were doing was unconstitutional, and they did not debate and discuss, and it was not clarified as to how or why. And as a matter of fact, in the debates and in these amendments, the corporations were not a constitutional factor. In other words, it's all unconstitutional, my friends. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution?
To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.